Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, Building and Protecting Your Business, One Podcast at a Time, Kessler's Family Production. In this episode, we are going to talk about business in 2017, perspectives on the insurance market, and Big Ben Roethlisberger. Our guest today is Mitch Long, a sales VP at CadSource and a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan. Mitch is an experienced insurance agent and broker who is a native North Carolinian and has seemingly spent time in each of the cities of North Carolina. He currently lives in Greensboro. Mitch came to CadSource over 3 years ago. He came from a large company where he had visions of retiring from, until one day he left with no set job. Mitch is focused on providing incredible value to his clients of financial advisors, property and casualty agents, and insurance agents. Through this, he deals directly with the consumer, helping implement insurance plans that allow individuals and companies build legacies. Mitch brings perspectives of someone with incredible work ethic and activity. He is very much focused on his clients and their clients, and we love that about him. So let's get into the podcast. Mitch, welcome to the Entrepreneur Perspectives Podcast. Great to have you.
It's great to be here. I'm really glad to be here, and go Steelers.
That's right. All right, so we're going to start with 10 questions requiring kind of a more thoughtful response and then end with 10 rapid-fire questions. You ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
All right, cool. So you heard the intro about you, but of course we can't do it justice in one opening statement. So what I want to do for the audience is tell them something real about you that the audience doesn't know.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about that. You know, one of the things a lot of people don't know is that I've actually run 10 marathons, and I'm not the smallest guy in the world. I'm 6'4", about 240. But I've run 10 marathons, including the New York Marathon, Chicago Marathon. So I'm not real fast, but I've always had the ability to kind of keep plodding on and finish the race.
That's it. So I was going to ask. So you've run them. Maybe you don't win the race, of course, but you do finish them, right?
Yeah, I'm usually in the middle, you know. So I my best time is about 3 hours and 30 minutes for 26.2 miles. So that's not awful. So you're going to be in the middle of most races, but you're not at the end.
Awesome. So when's the last marathon you raced in?
It's been a while. I've done some half marathons, but the marathons are, first of all, when you start having children, they're very time consuming from a training perspective. I mean, I was running 50, 55 miles a week trying to get ready for a marathon. So I guess the last one I ran was Chicago in 1995. But we've run some half marathons. I ran the Virginia 10 miler in Virginia. We ran a half marathon in Roanoke, so that's about all I have time to train for these days.
I gotcha. So does running a marathon, does that help you out in the business world, do you think?
I think it does. The one thing is just to keep going, because during the race, what ends up happening, you're physically ready because you've trained. But there's a big mental aspect to it, too, because you get tired of running. I ran the Charlotte Marathon, for example. And the hardest part of the Charlotte Marathon was right in the middle, 16 to 20 miles, you know, because it was uphill at the time I ran it. So you're already getting tired. You're starting to have a trudge uphill. Your mind starts saying, you know, I really would rather be over there having a drink and eating lunch than doing this anymore. And then you get through the 20-mile point, and you've got another six miles to go before the race is over. So it does teach you about perseverance and keeping going and not stopping. And you know, when things get hard, you don't give up. And so I think it's helped me in my business, because it's helped me to say, you know, even when sometimes you think I'm out here working and nothing's really happening, what you ultimately find out is when you keep going, things really do come back to you, and they do happen.
Okay. I like that. So when you made, and I mentioned this in the intro, when you left the company that you were with for how many years were you there?
12 years.
12 years. So, you know, you're going along, and I mean, you had conversations with many people that we both know that was a place where you were going to stay, and they were a great company, right? But you decide to make the move, and you decide to make the move. It wasn't overnight. Clearly, you had, you know, a thought process going on. What was that like? And, you know, not necessarily tying into the marathon aspect of things, but, right. You know, it's a journey, right? And you're going down this path, and you're exhausted, and you're tired, and you're trying to finish your own race, regardless of the company that you're with. It's still your own journey, your own race. How was that mentally?
Yeah, for you? For me, you know, as the company had changed hands a couple of times, and as the company got bigger and bigger, and I've had this happen before, but as the company gets bigger and bigger, you start feeling like your impact is less and less. And so, you know, the reason I came to CASSOURCE is because it's a small group. It's people that I've known for years, obviously. It really felt like coming home. I mean, it felt like getting back to what I want to do. And I, you know, my thing is, I don't want to be involved in all the corporate stuff. I want to be involved with the clients and the insured, the people that we're working with, to go out there and work with them directly. And that's what I am. And I'm not a corporate guy. Even though, as you said, I really thought that I would finish my career at that old company. But I think, particularly in our society today, the companies are changing hands so quickly that sometimes, you know, overnight things can really change and they're not the same. And it's not the place that you want to be personally.
Yeah, I understand that. So now you're here, you're in your day-to-day work. What is your focus day-to-day, and what's your ultimate goal for the business and for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, what I want to do, and I learned a long time ago, you know, that I want to be out in front of the agents. I mean, different people do their marketing and their business in different ways, but I've always been a face-to-face guy. And even in this world of social media and instant access and emails and cell phones and all that, there's still that personal relationship that you're trying to develop with your clients. And in our business, the clients are agents and financial planners. And they can get online and get anything they want online. So the difference to me is that face-to-face relationship where, you know, I've known a lot of the people that I work with for over 20 years. I know their kids. I was talking to an agent the other day, and I said, I remember when your son was 4 years old, and now he's getting married. So those relationships are hard to replace. And I think that still plays a big role in what we're trying to do here at CASSOURCE.
Yeah. So you're digging deep, right? You know, we talk about, you know, digging deep or building a relationship as opposed to just getting as many relationships as you possibly can and staying real small with those. You're of the mindset that, you know, build a relationship, like you said, know their kids, know that when their kids get married, obviously that seems to be real important for you.
Yep, absolutely. And I like that. That makes me, they know who I am. I, you know, of course, I go in there and brag about my kids and my granddaughter now. And, you know, but I see their kids and I see their grandchildren. And so that personal relationship, to me, builds loyalty. And as fast as our society is moving, if you can find some relationships where there's loyalty, that's going to help you in the future.
Right. And you're keeping it, and I've seen this, so I'm asking you something I kind of know already, but you're genuine in your conversation. So when you asked a question about my kid, for example, you care, you know, and we know that when you talk to business owners or people in business, they love to talk about themselves, and not in a bad way, I mean, but it's interesting, if you ask them questions about their kids or their interests, they perk up, right? And they love to talk. Absolutely. And off they go. And if you genuinely care to what they say, that, you know, it can't help but be a good conversation.
That's right. And I, you know, I was thinking, just as you were saying that, I was thinking about a story about your son, as a matter of fact, where we took his football to a football game and we were throwing it in the parking lot, and I accidentally threw it on top of the roof of a building. I don't know if you remember that.
I do. And, so does he.
And I mailed him a new football. I felt so bad about it. But, you know, that's a story that we still talk about. You know, now he's, what, 13, 14
yeah,
years
13.
Old?
13. It's crazy. Yep.
And so, you know, but that's a story we talked about for years, and that's that personal relationship that I think makes a difference.
Well, you know, it's funny, we talk about it, but he still talks about it. So often when we're playing football or we're in a random place playing football, he's like, Mitch sent me that football, remember that story? And he talks about it. He remembers that it was the Carolina Panthers versus the Miami Dolphins on Monday Night Football. So he remembers, like, specific aspects around that. He'll never forget who you are. And I remember my grandfather, you know, many years ago was in the insurance business. And one thing he used to do is he would put a stick of gum in a thank you letter. Well, now today, if you put a stick of gum in a thank you letter, you'd probably get the FDA would come after you or something, right?
That's it. Yeah, I'd be investigating you.
Yeah. So, but that was a memory that the kids had, the legacy had, the second and third generation, they would say, I remember your grandfather used to do this thing. And this could be like 30, 40 years ago, he used to do that. So it's that little memorable thing. You dig deep down to that relationship that lasts a long time.
Absolutely.
So removing all that you do for CADSource, you know, in your life and what you're doing, what is your passion?
Well, you know, as I've got older, you know, your life changes and things that you thought were really important as a 20-year-old or you know, just that's moved aside now. So, you know, I really personally enjoyed exercising. I've always felt like that helps me both physically and mentally because, you know, our business is a tough business, you know, something that does put some stress on you. But the other thing, I guess, is really my kids and now I've got a granddaughter and I get to play that role of grandfather and I don't have to. You know, I'm not taking them to school, but I just get to be with them and spoil them, and then I get to go home. So that's really become my passion. And then my son's still really active in sports, and he's getting ready to go to college in a year. So really trying to enjoy that last year of now he's going to play football this year. He's going to play basketball. And so just trying to enjoy every second of the games we've got left with him.
I can understand that. They grow fast.
Oh, yeah.
So you know, taking your son, we've talked about him a lot, you know, with him using social media and you guys listening to podcasts and kind of taking that into the marketing world. What is your perspective on marketing today compared to, say, what it was, you know, 15, 25 years ago?
Oh, yeah. You know, the funny thing is back when I first started, literally this sounds unbelievable, but I actually had a pager, no cell phone. And my boss said, you need to get a pager and have a roll of quarters in your pocket all the time. And literally, people would page me, and I'd head for the nearest payphone. You can't even find a payphone anymore. And we did business like that. I mean, and we did a lot of business like that. But it still, you know, was going out and seeing the agents and being in front of them because, you know, you didn't have that instant access, the podcast, the Skype, but that you do now. And now, you know, it's instant access and it's good. I mean, there's good things about it. I mean, I do a lot of business over the phone, for example, where people are giving me the information that I used to collect in front of them on an application and I can submit it online. And those things are very convenient. And what that does is it helps you focus. The people that I'm going to go see are the larger cases that are more complicated. And for the other clients that we still want to help and we still have that need to help them, we can get them done using the media and the online access that we have.
Okay. So in your conversations with business owners, let's say they're in their 50s and 60s, do you believe that in general they've adapted to the way marketing is today?
Some have, and you know, some haven't. It's sort of funny, but you know, I do have some agents that have been around. I've got one agent that's a $1 million round table Northwestern agent who's been around a long time. And you know, he was an old school guy, but he really has adapted to the media, and it takes the guys in their 50s and 60s a little longer to figure it out. The 12-year-old kids can figure it out in 2 seconds. I mean, you know, we always tell Adam, if we need to hook something up, we just give it to him and 10 minutes later it's done. But the older clients, the agents and clients are figuring that out, and they are using the social media and because they know they have to, because the younger generation that's coming up, that's what they're used to. That's how they want access to information is online on their phones. And so, you know, you really do have to adapt to that.
Yeah. Now, I think it's interesting, too, that you've adapted to it and you don't fight it. You know, we see a lot of people that fight it, that we don't understand Facebook or we don't understand that. And I get it, right? There's certain aspects of it that just are odd. But at the same time, there's so much happening within those ecosystems that if you can play and learn how to play within that ecosystem, you don't have to be active on it on a daily basis, but you can hire someone for it or whatever you need to do. But there's a lot being done there, and that's the direction that things are going. Whether it's Facebook or another company down the road or some other system that's built, there's a huge future in that. And it's funny, too, you brought up that story about your roll of quarters and the pagers. There was an article we wrote together a while ago, and we'll put that article in the show notes, the link to it. It's a pagers and rolls of quarters. It's a good story. So now taking, you know, we're talking about the baby boomer generation, right, or the 50s, 60s and older, and it applies to the market that we talk about quite a bit, which is the insurance market and more specifically the long-term care market. What is your view of the long-term care market? Obviously, it's changed a bit, and more change seems inevitable with cost of care on the rise, you know, the healthcare plan that is constantly in flux, and then people living longer. What is your view of that?
Well, I think it's exciting. And you know, the traditional long-term care, the plan that sort of worked like your, I always say it works like your homeowner's insurance. You know, I pay homeowner's insurance for 35 years. If my house never burns down, I really never got benefit from it. But what I tell people is if my house does burn down, that's the greatest deal I'll ever have because all the value of my assets will be replaced. Same thing with the traditional long-term care. You know, if you buy it and if I never need it, if I happen to be that person that never needs it, then maybe I didn't get any benefit from it. But there's still reasons to have it because the impact of that is huge. I mean, if I go in and like you said, the cost of healthcare these days, you know, $60,000-$70,000 in a nursing home per year, that's a big impact on my estate. But the good news is there's so much more opportunity now to couple the long-term care with your life insurance, with an annuity. So there's a lot more unique products on the marketplace that we can design specifically for the people that and to do what they want to do and how they want to address that issue.
Yeah, it's a constant question. You know, I think when we talk about life insurance, it's not as talked about, but long-term care is because so many people have a story about it, whether it's a grandparent or something that they dealt with personally or a family member, they know someone who's dealt with it. So it's a topic that people want to talk about. It's in the papers, it's in the magazines. And, you know, obviously healthcare in general is always talked about, right? It's every day you pick up a newspaper, or if people still pick up newspaper, you pick up your iPhone and there's an article that you can read about it. So it's always top of mind. So it must be interesting for you as you sit down that people want to talk about that, where traditionally insurance is not the most talked about topic.
No, and you know, the thing is now with the life insurance, about 60% of every life insurance policy we have now has some kind of what I call living benefit on it, whether it's an accelerated death benefit, long-term care, critical illness, chronic illness. I'm meeting with a doctor today that wants disability insurance, but he's 67 years old, and most of the domestic carriers are not going to write that. But we're actually going to use a life insurance policy with a critical and chronic illness that'll give him an opportunity, an option. And that's what I talk to people about. By having this long-term care rider on your policy or critical illness or chronic illness, down the road, it just gives you options. You may never access your life insurance for long-term care, but isn't it nice to know that you have the opportunity to do that if you needed to? So about 60% of all the life cases we're doing now have some kind of rider on there related to long-term care.
It's amazing because 10 years ago, that wasn't the case. And now look at it, how much it's changed. Yep. And a lot of what you're saying is how you're educating the consumer, you're educating the advisor, which is something that obviously we talk a lot about. And then taking that education and kind of going back a little bit to Adam, for example, what we hear a lot about education and whether education in this country is working, if it's not working. For someone with a kid in high school, and you've had other kids go through the same process, what do you think about education as it is today?
Well, I was thinking about that, and you know, I had a professor one time that talked about what a college degree, for example, does for you. And he said, it's just a ticket. He said, it's like getting your ticket punched. He said, you know, some doors will not open for you if you, and you might be the smartest guy in the world, but he said, some doors will not open for you if you don't have this college degree. But he said, you know, when you get that, after that, it's what do you really have? And so that's the thing that we always talk about with our kids is, you know, you got to get the college degree, but you've also got to have something else besides that. And you've got to, when that door opens, then you've got to be able to perform. And so I think that's what the education needs to be focused on is really practical. You know, what am I learning that's going to be able, that I'm going to be able to translate into a job or an occupation or a career in the future?
Yeah. So getting that real life experience, beats the classroom work, but the classroom work is obviously necessary, like you're saying, because it's getting your ticket punched to get you to the next level.
Well, I know with my son Adam, you know, he doesn't have to have a job, but we actually made him go up and work, you know, at a local restaurant here to get experience, practical experience on what it means to show up on time, what it means to do your job during the day, and make yourself valuable to your company. So, you know, because we always say there's always room for good people. Mm-hmm. And so if you go in there and perform, then they're going to say, hey, there's no way we're going to get rid of this guy because he's always here. He's always working hard and he brings something to the table. And we'd laugh. He'd come home. He was doing dishes and he'd be soaking wet when he came home. And he made the comment one time and he said, I feel like a single mom trying to make ends meet, you know, and we laugh. But, you know, and even some of his friends were saying, why are you working? You don't have to work. But he wanted to get that practical experience of what it meant to be in the workplace. And I think that's as valuable as the education is.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good story. So you have a perspective on it. And then, you work with, so we talked about 50s and 60 years old, the baby boomer generation, and they have a perception of someone like what your son's like, or, you know, the millennial generation, the 20s and the very early 30s, I guess, right now. And they have a take and they have this perception that they're doing it wrong, let's say. And social media, as we've talked about already, becomes so big. And you watch your son and they're on their phone and they're flying through their Facebook feed or Instagram or Snapchat. What's your perspective on the baby boomer generation as it relates to not only them using social media, or, you know, your kids or young people older than your son, for example? What's your perspective of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the social media is good, although I think that it can be some paralysis by analysis kind of thing. Is so much out there and they spend so much time on their phone that often it's, you know, hard to get that generation to focus. Because it's all so quick. And so, you know, I think there's a danger in that. Although, you know, things like LinkedIn and some of the business, you know, related social media, I think it's an awesome way to connect. I mean, you can find people that fit your market and what you're trying to do almost instantaneously. But I think that still that personal relationship, even the younger generation, you know, they like to do things. I mean, I have more and more that they like to do things over the phone. Let's do it through phone and email. And I sell more insurance now to younger generation on the phone. But I still, you know, you get those right client and they still want that personal relationship with the person they're working with. And so, you know, you just have to kind of know your marketplace and kind of read how they want to do business and then have the ability to do that business the way they want to do it.
Yeah. Now, kind of off the cuff right now, you and I are, as we have this conversation, we're on Skype. I can see you. You can see me. Do you think video, live video has an opportunity to, you know, maybe even develop more business for you?
I think it can, and you know, because it is hard to be everywhere, and you know, and I'm a guy that likes to go drive and see people, and even after all these years, that's the way I started, but I still like that, you know. But you do that more selectively. But yeah, I can see right now I could be on the phone with you, and you could be a client of mine, and we could be getting the business done, and you can be anywhere. I mean, you can be sitting on the beach, and I can be doing business with you. I had an agent that called me this morning and he's in Wisconsin by a lake, and he called me and we did some business over the phone at 6:30 in the morning. So yeah, I mean, it just gives you an opportunity to be, you know, have relationships with more and more people that maybe are not close enough to you that you can do business with them face to face.
Yeah, absolutely. The development of augmented reality to where you're talking about, where you guys can actually both be on the beach talking to each other, but you're in your house and he's in his house somewhere in Wisconsin, and you guys can be on the beach in Miami Beach and having a conversation like you're really there. That's the direction this is going. It's wild to even think that could be the way you're selling life insurance, let's say, in 20 years.
Absolutely.
So with communication, with video, we like to talk a lot about email marketing. I think it's a polarizing topic. You know, we a lot of times live in our email, sometimes too much. You know, and we like to ask people what their take is on email marketing from the standpoint of, you know, you go to a website and they give you opt-ins. Do you sign up for those opt-ins? And you do you unsubscribe from them? What's your overall take on email marketing?
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's a fine line. You know, I've done a lot of email stuff in the past, and you know, you want to be effective. You don't want to overwhelm. And you know, what I always worry about is people get so many emails from so many different directions, so many different marketing organizations, that what ends up happening is they don't view them as important, and so they end up delete, delete, delete. I know I do that a lot. I don't know who you are. I'm going to delete you. And so, you know, with what I try to do is not overwhelm people. You know, if you send something every day, they're going to ignore it because it's just something every day. So I try to give it where it's concise and quick and something that, you know, one pager. I don't send 25. Some of our carriers will have a 60-page marketing. I said, nobody's going to flip through 60 pages of information on an email. And so usually it's try a one pager, a quick idea. And you know, what I call that is just another way to stir the pot. And that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to, it's another way to touch your client and or touch an agent who you're trying to get some information in front of. But you want to make it concise and not overwhelming.
Makes sense. And so, with that, you know, I think a lot of companies have gotten in their own way and got away from the heart of their business, which kind of ties into an article we wrote together. It was your article on sportsupreneur.com, titled "Get Back to the Heart of Your Business." And in it, we talked about how businesses are losing their heart. And you often say how people don't have any authority or ability to make a decision, and ultimately, you know, businesses forgot why they even got into business in the first place. Expand on this a little bit.
Oh yeah, and I, you know, you hit it right on the nail. You know, my thing with some of our carriers that we work with, and we love them all, and as you know, some are good at certain things and not good at others. But you know, they really have people are not able to make decisions, and so you know, you end up with the administration piece of it becomes the thing instead of saying, hey, we're in the business of, you know, selling insurance and meeting clients' needs, and these are the things that we're going to do really well. We end up, the process becomes the business. And, oh, well, you know, we have a team that looks at this and a team that looks at that, and a team that looks at this, where I always have believed, give that client, hire a good person and give them the authority to make a decision and to get that business process in the way you need it processed so that we can get our product out to the company. And I was talking to one of our reps the other day, and I said, man, we're terrible at getting our product to the marketplace. I mean, our product is a policy, a promise, and we need to be better at getting our product to the marketplace, and we're awful at it. And I just don't, I mean, if I went to the grocery store and said, I'd like to buy a can of beans, and they said that's going to be 2 weeks, what would I do? I would go to a different grocery store, right? I'm not going to say, well, I'll wait 2 weeks. I mean, you've got to get your product to the marketplace. And so I think that's where some of the companies have lost focus. And that's what, you know, here at CASOR, we're trying to do is we're trying to deliver what our promise is. And that's what I like about what we do.
And you think small businesses, you know, these large companies have so many layers of management. And I believe that small businesses have an advantage in that space. Obviously, they have disadvantages in others, but they have an advantage in that space because they can create people, they can create the ability to make a decision. You would agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, the smaller companies are uniquely positioned to move quicker. And the larger companies get so many layers. And, you know, if you go to a bank, for example, everybody at a bank is a vice president with no authority to do anything. And you know, I had one case on a life case where I was trying to get them that they had a 30-year-old assignment where the client had paid the loan off 25 years ago. And so I was trying to get somebody at the bank to just release the assignment that was on the policy. And I talked to 10 different people before I finally got somebody that would make a decision to do it. And so I just think the smaller companies like we are we can move quicker. And I think the larger companies are going to get beat because they can't move fast enough.
Yeah, it makes sense. So frustrations like that, when we have, because you have strategic relationships with different carriers, you know, frustrations can lead to fear and kind of leads to that question about what is your biggest fear in your business life?
Well, my biggest fear is actually the government. Our government, you know, in the previous administration in particular, is too involved in business, and I think the government needs to get out of the way. I've been a big believer that the government's job should be to create jobs in the marketplace and have people working. But a lot of the things that were done by the previous administration were really costing jobs. As you know, there's not as many people coming into our industry to work in our industry. I was at a meeting about 5 years ago where there were 250 agents. And one of those speakers said, if you're under 35, stand up. And there were three people out of 250 in that room that were under 35. And part of that is because the government's really made it difficult to be in this industry. And so that's one of my biggest fears is just further government regulation and intervention.
Yeah. Now, we won't get into a political discussion here because that could go a lot of different directions, right? But at the same point, you make a great point about the youth in the insurance industry. I see that there's a huge opportunity to become an advisor in the insurance industry right now because, like you said, you know, who under 35 is in this business? And it doesn't seem like it's the cool thing to do right now. You know, but look at a company like us, and I'm not, you know, speaking our book, but we've developed a marketing business that's very interesting, that's very more cutting edge than the life insurance industry, but it all goes back to the foundation of, you know, protecting your business. And that, you know, that's what we're doing in this podcast. You know, what if a business doesn't have a buy-sell agreement? They might have the best idea they've ever had, but if they don't protect that with the guy that wrote the code for that software that they developed, what good is that business if that person's no longer there? So it's so important to have someone in this industry that is young, that understands all those different moving parts of these other businesses, and they can go and have B2B relationship with these other businesses. So I think you make a really good point in that there's opportunity, but like you said, there's fear in that because there's too much involvement, then they could eliminate the business altogether, like kind of happened with the health insurance market.
That's right, absolutely.
Don't go anywhere because we are going into some rapid fire questions right after we thank our sponsor. West Connor Insurance is a leading property and casualty agency in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks to their love of entrepreneurialism and insurance, they have sponsored this podcast. You can find the office of West Connor Insurance on Providence Road in South Charlotte, North Carolina, near the new developments of Waverly Place and Ray Farms. If you are looking to get a quote on your auto or home insurance policy, give Wes and his staff a call at 704-665-5340, or you can find them online at wesconnor.com. So cool. All right. So we're kind of past the thoughtful round. We go into what we call the rapid fire round, where we go in
more quick. The bonus round.
You're the goalie. I'm going to shoot pucks at you one after another. A few might be more difficult. So, you know, take your time with those and let's get going.
Sure.
So what book are you reading right now?
I'm actually reading a book that my daughter gave me called Hitler's Furies. And it's about women in Nazi Germany and how some of the women became, I don't know, drank the Kool-Aid, so to speak, and became, you know, Nazis. And it's, you know, very surprising where some of these women came from and how they ended up being, you know, brainwashed almost, for lack of a better word, into the Nazi regime. So she kind of turned it on, you know, and she just read it out of the blue. I don't even know why she's doing it. It's not what she's studying, but she gave it to me, and so that's what I'm reading right now.
That's great. So how are you reading that? Is that hardcover, paperback, Kindle?
Believe it or not, you know, because I've always been, I mean, I read most of my books I listen to because I'm usually running or, you know, so I have books on my phone, and I'm usually listening to it with my headphones. But I'm actually reading a hardback book, and it's been a while since I've done that. So it's sort of neat. I read, you know, 10, 12 pages a night. But yeah, so it is a hardcover.
That's good. So when you listen, what app do you use to listen to your books?
It's just audio books, and yeah. I'm just downloading them to my phone, and it's so easy. That's the other thing about technology; it makes things so easy for you. So every month I get you have a credit, and I go out there and look.
Okay, so it's on Audible. That's through the Amazon, right?
It is.
Yeah. You listen,
and I just look at the books and download one, and I'm listening 5 minutes later. I'm listening to the book, you know.
I love it. Now, do you listen at normal speed, or do you pick the speed up on those?
No, I'm normal speed. I've tried to pick it up a little bit, but I feel it makes me feel anxious.
Yeah, you do get anxious.
So I like to listen to it to relax. I try not to do it.
I gotcha. I listen to a lot of books at speed just because of time. And I think that's a big thing, you know, no different than this podcast. This podcast could be, let's say, 35, 40 minutes. But if I can listen to this podcast and I'm used to it now, it takes time to get used to listening at, say, 1.5 times speed. if I can listen to something and if something takes 30 minutes and I can listen to it in 20 minutes, I just save myself 10 minutes. To me, that's right. Valuable, but I get it too. You know, I've definitely listened to books like Shoe Dog, the Phil Knight book. That's a long book, but it's so interesting to me that I just let it go and listen at, you know, normal speed. But yeah, that makes sense. All right, so next question, more rapid fire. What is your favorite social media network and why?
I don't know.
If you have one.
I guess LinkedIn, just because I have more experience with it. And, you know, I've made some connections out there with some business opportunities. And you know, I'd like to know more about how to turn that. You and I've talked about that as to how to turn that. You know, it's so easy to say, be my friend, you know, and the person will always come back and friend you and accept you. But then I'm always like, all right, then what? Now what do we do? How do we turn that into a relationship that we can do business? So I guess that'd be the one that I would say, LinkedIn.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it goes back to the question that you're sort of asking in a way is it's just building that relationship, no different than when you build a relationship with someone, you know, face to face. It's a little harder to do it. But eventually that conversation where you go a little bit back and forth, let's say messaging, can lead to an email, can lead to a phone call, can lead to a face to face, can lead to a lunch, and who knows what. Yep. And if it's done genuinely, then I think you have a chance. The issue that I see with LinkedIn and a lot of these social media networks is people are always out to get something. And what can I sell you? And I've always found it interesting that I get hit up constantly and people already have something for our business. And I'm always amazed, like, you don't know anything about me. You don't know anything about our business. So how can you sell me anything? Like, shouldn't we just talk for a little bit?
Yeah.
So, okay. What social media app do you just not get?
Facebook. And I do not do Facebook. And I just, you know, it's, to me, that's something, you know, where you're, it's more social, which I get. But some of the things that people put on Facebook, I just couldn't imagine anybody being interested in what I had for breakfast or, you know, that I went across the street to see a neighbor. I just, you know, so that one's one that I don't get and don't think I will get.
I gotcha. So, all right. Well, so what did you have for breakfast today?
I actually had cereal. So, you know.
What kind?
It was delicious. I should have taken a picture of it. So
it's like, did you use almond milk or soy
That's
milk?
It. Yeah. No, just straight up
milk. Straight up cow's milk.
It's just old school.
Yeah. All right. So what app or program in your day-to-day work life is most important to you from anything from, like, it could be a project management tool, calendar, Google Maps?
Well, probably, you know, it's funny that you put Google Maps on there, but it really is. I mean, I'm constantly, you know, plugging a number in, and I can remember the day, just to tell you a story. I mean, I used to have maps. I mean, old school maps, and I shouldn't say this on out here, but I'd be going down the road at 70 miles an hour trying to read a map, take the next right, take the next left. So the you know, that map, you know, app is awesome, and it's telling you where to go, and most times it gets you there. Sometimes it gets lost. But for me, you know, it's the phone, it's the iPhone, it's you know, being able to get on my emails. I mean, I can do tons of stuff on my phone anywhere I am, which is so cool. I remember the days when people would send me emails and I wouldn't look at my email until the next morning because you didn't have the Wi-Fi all over the place that you could get on your email. I've got out Wi-Fi on my iPhone. Now it's instant. I mean, an email pops up and I'm responding immediately. And so, you know, that's how things have really changed.
Yeah, I get it. It's the all-encompassing iPhone, right? And does amazing things. So what's the one thing you would tell an up-and-coming entrepreneur, young person to focus on if they're getting started in business today?
Yeah, I think, it's hard to say, but I think it's focusing on your target market, whatever that may be. You know, when I first started in the insurance business, I mean, I literally just got in the car and drove down the road and said, oh, there's an insurance agency or a financial planner. Let me just walk in and talk to them. And I developed a lot of relationships that way. But if I could go back, what it would be is to really have a plan and to really understand the type of, you know, whatever it may be that you're doing. You know, who do I want to work with? Who are the people that I want to target? And then to do that really well, to focus on that and not get distracted and say, this is what I do. And to do it really well, and then focus on those people that want to do business with you.
That's good. All right, so give us a quick personal story that got you where you are today.
You know, It's hard to say. My mother, you know, my mother was in the insurance business, so I kind of inherited it. I think you had some family in the insurance business, so that kind of got you going as well. But you know, I do have a story that where I got to see what I was doing and how it worked. And I had a lady that we did some estate planning for. She was 83 years old at the time. Her husband had passed away. He had done a really, really good job. And so they had an estate tax problem. And so here she is at 83 years old with a pretty major estate tax problem. She'd never written a check in her life. She didn't even know where the checkbook was. And so she was lost. And so we helped her, her and her family, number one, solve their estate planning issue. Number two, we helped her with long-term care. And at that age, she could buy a long-term care policy back then. You can't do that anymore. And what happened in the year 2010 is, the daughter called me and said, "Mom, is ill, and we were going to put her in a nursing home, but she just wants to go home. Does her long-term care policy pay for her to be at home?" And I said, "Absolutely." So I got to see, and I actually went out there when the company came to help her, but I got to see that long-term care policy work. I got to see a lady that spent the last 9 months of her life in the place that she wanted to be, in her home that she lived in for 50 years. And the nurse came out in the morning, the nurse came out in the afternoon, and she got to me, it was a dignified way for her to live the end of her life. And then at the end to have the estate go to her two adult children and have the estate taxes paid for by life insurance. That's really what hit home to me, to say, wait a minute, this is what we do is really important. And we are helping people. And so that's that idea of helping people is something that's kind of kept me in the business.
Keeps you going. Yeah. And you took that. I like what you did, because you created a personal story for yourself, but you also gave what my next question was going to be, was a short insurance story. And you just did that. So that's really neat. All right. Picking the pace back up. We're going to go into sports a little bit, as we like to talk about. If you could pick one team of yours to win it all this year, which team would you choose?
Well, it's got to be the Steelers, of course, and that's the way it is every year. I've liked the Steelers since I was 6 years old. When I was 6 years old, they played the 72 Dolphins in the playoffs, and I think I've told you this story. And the reason I started liking them is I remember I felt sorry for them because the Dolphins were so good, and of course they went undefeated. And so I sort of felt sorry for the Steelers. And of course, the next 10 years was an awesome 10 years for the Steelers. I mean, four Super Bowls in 6 years. But, like we talk about, I know you're a Bills fan, but you know, when you grow up with that, I mean, my wife always says, "I don't get it. I don't get this thing about the Steelers." And I said, "This has been my life. I mean, this has been part of my life for, I'm 53 years old now, for 45 years, this team has been part of my life, and I've seen them be really, really good, and I've seen them be really, really bad." And so you sort of live and die with them. So always the Steelers, every year we're hoping we'll get one more. So it's supposed to be, seven, heaven for seven, right? So get the seventh
Super Bowl. Yeah, no, I like that. So, and it is, you're right, it runs deep. Sports, as we've talked about in an article on Sportspreneur, it's sports matters. And, it matters because it doesn't matter in a way. And it's a really good outlet for all the different things that we've discussed, whether it's the economy, the government, your business, making money, generating revenue for your company that you work with. And but sports is deep because it brings you back, and it's something bigger than you that you don't have control over, but you can have fun with it. I mean, to a point now, right? Adam is one of the biggest Steelers fans, right? Isn't his entire room painted in Steelers colors?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And day one, he had a Steeler outfit on the day that he came home from the hospital. So, I mean, he's even more than me. I mean, it's ingrained in him from the first day of his life. And so those are the kind of connections you and I have talked about, connecting with people on the things that they like. It might not be sports. It might be something else. Sure. But, we have made a lot of connections where we basically sit there and talk about Ohio State football. I know you've got some clients that are big Ohio State fans. And that's how you really connect with people and get beyond just that, "Can I sell you life insurance?" And so those things are important.
Absolutely. So is Big Ben, he's getting kind of closer to the end here. Is how many years has he got left? Is he going to bring another one home?
Well, I think that, you know, I think with him, I was talking to somebody yesterday. I think this team that they've got coming back is probably the best team they're going to have in the next 5 or 6 years. And I think he senses that if I'm going to get another one, it's going to be here next year. Mm-hmm. And I think he'd be a lot like, you know, Peyton Manning, for example. I think that if he won a Super Bowl, he'd probably retire.
Yeah.
But you got to get past the Patriots. And I was just sitting here thinking, you know, in business, you're trying to be consistent. You're trying to have consistent revenue, consistent business, and be consistent with your clients. And you got to give them those guys as much as I know they're in your division, but you got to be consistent like they are. And year after year, they seem to have that. They're consistently good. And so we got to get, Steelers have got to figure out a way to get past them. So.
Okay. So that leads to the next question. Who's winning the Super Bowl this year?
Well, I'll always say the Steelers.
Okay.
Right, but you do got to put the Patriots in the mix. I mean, you know they're going to be around unless they have some injuries. And I'd love for your Bills to handle that for us, if you will.
Yeah, right. And I think the AFC East is usually decided around July.
July. So we can get a wild card, right?
Yeah, I was talking to a Jets fan, and we both agreed that it's not in the cards for at least the Bills or the Jets. I don't think the Dolphins either, but Patriots are probably going to have a pretty good chance to win again. But the Steelers, like you said, they look good, and they're a fun team to watch.
Yep, somebody just has to figure out a way to beat New England at New England.
That's
right?
It. So. That's it. So, all right, well, I appreciate everything that you shared today. I know the audience will as well, but I also know that the audience sometimes wants to interact with the guests that we have on the show. I know you're interacting with people on a daily basis, but if someone was to get a hold of you, hey, it might be social on LinkedIn, email, phone. What's the best way, if someone wanted to get a hold of you right now, what's the best way to do it?
Well, the phone, you know, the phone's in my hand all day long. So, you know, my phone number, 336-580-7675. Feel free to text or email Mitch, M-I-T-C-H, at CASSource.com. Either one of those things, I'm going to have that in my hand all day anyway. So I'll see you coming through.
That's great. All right. So we're going to give you a bonus question. You're a great joke teller, as people have already figured out. You're a good storyteller. Do you have a family-friendly joke that you could share with all of us?
Well, I actually have a funny story. So this is a story that I tell in a lot of my long-term care seminars, and I never have forgotten it. So I do a lot of long-term care seminars, and I was speaking down in Mooresville, North Carolina, at a senior citizen center. And I mean, it was an old group. I mean, not like 70s. It was 80s and above, and it was packed. I mean, it was full. And so one of the stories that I tell during my speeches is I usually talk about my grandmother. And, you know, my grandmother moved in with my parents when she was 88 years old. And my dad, he said, I gave her a bell. And I said, you know, if you need anything, you just ring that bell. And so he said, you know, she rings that bell every 3 hours. And so I was telling the story because I think it connects with people about your family, your mom. Maybe you remember something about your parents when they passed away. So I usually tell the story. Well, this lady who was 92 years old, right in the middle of me talking, says, well, I've got a story about a bell. And I'm kind of looking around and I'm like, all right, well, go ahead, you know, give us the story. So she said that she had fallen and broke her hip. And so she said, I was moved in with my older sister. Now get this, she's 92. She moves in with her older sister, who was 94. And she said, I could not get out of the bed. I had to use one of the bedside toilets in the morning. So she would come in there and she would help me get on the toilet and she would give me a bell. And she said, when you're done, ring the bell. And so one day I'm in there and I'm in there ringing the bell. And she said, I could hear her in the kitchen going, well, there's the ice cream man. Let's go get some ice cream. And the place, just the whole room just fell out. I'm so glad I let her tell the story. And it was hilarious. And so that was a story. And I still, to this day, in my long-term care seminars, will tell that story.
It's amazing.
And people always think it's
hilarious. Yeah, it's amazing the stuff that you can encounter when you get out there and have these meetings and then you run into a situation like that that just lives with you forever. It is so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the fun part of the business is you are meeting different people and hearing their different stories.
Yeah, well, I think we could come back with another podcast and just tell stories about interactions we've had with different people and at different events, and that would be a good time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Mitch, it was absolutely awesome having you on this podcast. For those that don't know, Mitch is an indirect reason why this podcast is happening right now. From the revenue he brings into CASSource on a daily basis to his excitement about the changing business landscape, the work he does matters and it allows CASSource to grow, which in turn spawns ideas like this podcast. The perspectives he brings to our business all the time and on this podcast specifically are now perspectives you as a business owner and entrepreneur can use for yourself. And for that, Mitch, thank you. And
for I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. And for any business owner or entrepreneur that is having a tough time making changes in your business, I would encourage you to watch a person like Mitch Long. He is someone that wasn't looking for change, but eventually figured out for himself change was the best thing for him. If you have questions, feel free to reach out to him directly, as he's already stated, and you can reach out to me as well. You can contact me at Twitter, at Eric_Kaz, or with the same name on Instagram, or you can find us at kazsource.com with links to us on the different social networks. And thank you for listening to KazSource Podcast, Entrepreneur's Perspectives, Building and Protecting Your Business One Podcast at a Time. And until next time, we're out of here. A big thanks to West Connor Insurance for their support to the insurance community and for sponsoring this podcast. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It's a big deal to us. We hope you found value in it. And if you did, we would be incredibly grateful if you gave us a review on iTunes. Remember to subscribe to this podcast and feel free to share it with anyone you know. More than anything, thank you again for listening. We appreciate it.